Hey, everybody. Dennis Prager here with Julie Hartman. Dennis and Julie. I just got back from South Africa, and Julie is in New York City. It gives you an idea of how committed we are to Dennis and Julie. That I was 2 days ago in Africa, and I'm doing this. And Julie is in New York City, and she's doing this. But I'm obsessed with not missing a Dennis and Julie. We've never missed one, correct, Julie?
We have not missed one in our 2 years of doing this. And it was a bit difficult trying to schedule this remotely. And I hate missing Dennis and Julie's. Dennis and Julie's are the highlight of my week. But I said to Dennis, as we were encountering some difficulty, I said, you know, worse comes to worse, we may have to skip it. And Dennis cut in and said, no, we're going to figure out how to not skip it. So it shows you how committed both of us are. And I loved your reaction. Even the thought of skipping it was
well,
so terrible.
Well, I have missed one in 330 fireside chats for PragerU. One in 330. Mm. And I wouldn't have missed that one, but I had COVID and we couldn't, in fairness or even legally, have them come to the house while I had COVID. Otherwise, I would have done it. It wouldn't have mattered to me. So we have so much to talk about. Obviously, me in Africa and you in New York City and what's going on there. I think we should start with you in New York City because you told me 5 minutes ago that you visited Columbia University. Did you see the students who had taken over the big campus there?
No, I was going to go on that day where the students violently entered and occupied themselves in Hamilton Hall. And then, of course, we saw those images of the police using a crane to get in and extricate the students. I was going to go that evening, but then, you know, I figured that it probably wouldn't be the best or safest idea. So I watched it from television, but I went a few days before and I took a lot of pictures and videos, which people can see on my YouTube channel. And I also played a lot of those videos on your show, Dennis, when I was guest hosting for your radio show here in New York City while you were in South Africa. And what was interesting is that I was really just observing the outside groups that flocked to Columbia's sidewalk because I was not allowed inside the gates. They had dozens and dozens and dozens of police, and they were only allowing Columbia students who presented an ID to enter into the gates of the school. But I could look through the gates and see the encampments of the Palestine flags and the tents, and it just looked awful. But on the sidewalk, there was this huge group of Orthodox Jews. You may know the sect of them. I can't remember the name, who were chanting for the eradication of the state of Israel. That's right. Orthodox Jews chanting for the eradication of Israel. There was also right next to them a big group of Muslims who were praying in the direction of Mecca. And one of the individuals got on a bullhorn before the prayer and started talking about glory to Hamas and glory to the students who are standing in solidarity with them in this great moment, the person on the bullhorn was saying, of change. And then there was another guy who I spoke to who had and you'll find this to be especially interesting, a big Christian cross on him. And he was holding up a sign that on the one side had a picture of an American flag and it said free speech. And then on the other side, the sign said Israel equals Nazis. And I went up to him and I talked with him and he told me that Jews control both the Democrat and Republican Party in the United States. They are ruining our Christian nation and that the Jews always put their agenda first and that they have a, quote, diabolical agenda to bring back, as if it existed, witchcraft and child sacrifice to the United States. So that was just on the sidewalk at Columbia. I'm going to pause to hear your reaction, but of course I have some thoughts. But the important point, Dennis, for you and others to know is that these individuals did not appear to be affiliated at all with Columbia University. These were not students. They did not appear to be faculty nor administration. But nevertheless, their presence on the sidewalk outside of Columbia is very significant.
And the significance to your mind is?
Well, let's take the example of the anti-Semite, the guy who was truly just a vicious, vicious anti-Semite yelling about witchcraft and child sacrifice. Here's the two points of significance. The first is, why is it that a guy like that feels like the sidewalk of Columbia University would be a hospitable place for him to set up shop and spew his hatred? That indicates something about what's going on at Columbia, that he would feel comfortable setting up shop there and doing that. And the second point is that no wonder he felt comfortable setting up shop and doing that, because for the 3 hours that I was there, not a single Columbia student walking by challenged him. Now, I get when there's somebody crazy, you don't want to go up to them, but many students were actually pumping their fists, praising him. Wow. Now, can you imagine if he were saying, instead of Jews, he were saying Black people have a diabolical agenda, or trans people have a diabolical agenda, or immigrants have a diabolical agenda? Don't you think that some students would crowd around him and challenge him if he were saying that about any other group besides Jews?
Well, Ami Horowitz got beaten up at City College of New York just for showing up with an American flag.
Was it this bad in the 60s? I mean, people are saying, I mean, people know it's bad now, but people are going, oh, yeah, you know, the 60s were just as bad. You lived through that. Is that true?
Not only did I live through it, I was at Columbia.
Oh, great.
irony of ironies. So that's an interesting question. Was it as bad? It was overwhelmingly about Vietnam, and it was overwhelmingly about students not wanting to be drafted to fight in Vietnam. The moment the draft ended, the demonstrations ended. This has nothing to do, obviously, with drafting Americans. It has everything to do with hatred of Israel and hatred of America. And anyone who denies that they're virtually always linked has decided to lie to themselves. That's why the Ami video is so important. He went without saying a word. He just went to the demonstration at City College of New York, not far from where Columbia is, and he showed up with an American flag, and they literally beat him up. I mean, you would think they would either ignore him or actually be happy to say, to show Americans, oh, you see, we're pro-American. We just hate Israel. But they were, they're pleased. I read on my show report after report about the taking down of an American flag at a college and substituting the Palestinian flag. People
happened at Harvard.
That's right. That's right. That was one of the places. You should see. I put it up. I rarely tweet, which is a problem, but I did put up one. I was so moved by this little video of 11 seconds, I think it was, of New York Police Department officers taking down the Palestinian flag. Where was it? Was it at City College? Maybe. And putting back the American flag, they took down the Palestinian flag and just threw it on the floor, just, you know, like a rag, and put up the American flag, and they were cheered. I mean, I said this 25 years ago, there's a civil war in this country. You know, whether or not it's a full-fledged violent one, and I pray it doesn't come to that, but there is a civil war in this country. So to answer you, no, I don't think it was as bad. Because this is animated. That was not animated by hatred of America. Some students hated America. They spelled them, at Columbia, I remember, America was spelled with a K, like it was a fascist country. But it was animated by, I don't want to go to Vietnam. Let's stop that. And that was it. This is animated by hatred. Hatred of Israel. Sometimes hatred of Jews as well. Although it's very hard to distinguish between the two. And hatred of America. So this is more dangerous than what was happening in the 60s.
Well, as you know, Dennis, when I was at Harvard in my final few weeks, I delivered a senior speech condemning anti-Americanism because I saw that as the root of so many of the problems that were infecting Harvard with regard to a variety of issues. This was, of course, before October 7th. But, you know, the hatred of Israel existed to a much lesser degree on campus, but campus was very woke. And I ended that speech in May of 2022 by saying that the students, faculty, administration at the university were cowardly by allowing rancid, woke, anti-American ideas to spread. And my final line was, if we do not stand up to this now, our civilization will face a somber reckoning. And I think that we are in the, some say we're in the beginning stages, some say we're in the full-fledged reality of that somber reckoning. But Dennis, I interviewed a Columbia student on your show when I guest hosted for you. She's so eloquent and brave. She is in her final 3 weeks at Columbia. And she's taking classes on Zoom. She is off campus. Thankfully, she lives in New Jersey. So she went home to New Jersey. And she said, we don't think there's going to be graduation in 3 weeks. And that's the case with a lot of these schools. How are they going to have graduation? I mean, at Harvard, you have 30,000 people in Harvard Yard on graduation day. They're, of course, these crazy nutbags are going to use it as an opportunity to stage another, you know, protest. And this girl who I was speaking to, she was of the class in 2020 when she was graduating from high school who lost her graduation due to the COVID lockdowns. And now in 2024, she's maybe losing her graduation due to the campus wokeness. And so this has really entered a new category of dangerousness and destruction. But I actually think that something really good could come of this. Because if it were not for these protests, which are in every way terrible, and certainly the violence and the Jew hatred that has ensued is despicable, and I don't think there's anything good about that. But think about it. If it weren't for these protests, there would still be a President Claudine Gay at Harvard and a President Liz McGill at Penn. And I think there's something to this where it is exposing these universities and their leadership for the rotten places that they have become. And so next year, for instance, it'll be fascinating to see how many applications these schools get if they are able to continue with in-person classes. We are now in a turning point in our country where these campuses have largely become non-functional. And so they better recalibrate or they will continue to be non-functional.
Well, that's one way to see it, and I pray you're right, and it would be positive. I do think some positives, I'll tell you one positive I do believe that has come out of it. It's clearer than ever what I wrote in Why the Jews 40 years ago, that Jew hatred is civilization hatred. There's no such thing as I hate Jews, but I love good civilization or I love Western civilization. It doesn't exist. It's a hatred of everything noble that the West stands for. And so that's a silver lining. But I'll tell you why I'm not quite sanguine about this. At Barnard, the faculty voted that essentially the president of Barnard, who did call the police to end the violent takeover of the college, the entire AA, what is it, American Association of University Professors, AAUP, I think it is, the entire membership at Barnard voted essentially that she be fired. If you're still waiting to buy gold sitting on the sidelines, it might cost you precious gains. This is Dennis Prager for AmFed Coin and Bullion, my choice for precious metals. The current economic climate could make buying gold a very desirable safe haven commodity. The government's overprinting of money, the fluctuation of interest rates, and high inflation can easily impact the value of gold and why you should seriously consider buying now. I've been working with AmFed Coin and Bullion's owner, Nick Grovich, for some years, and I'm so glad that I jumped into the precious metals market when I did. Nick has been in the industry for over 42 years, and he's proud of providing transparency and fair pricing to build long-term relationships. Nick and his team have my back. They will have yours. They recommend what's in your best interest, not theirs. And I never worry about hidden commissions or huge markups. If you're interested in buying or selling, call AmFed Coin and Bullion for a free coin performance review. 800-221-7694. AmericanFederal.com. AmericanFederal.com. See, what is not known to most Americans is that the college presidents, who were cowards to begin with, are not only under pressure from left-wing students, but from left-wing faculty. And the proportion of left-wing faculty is much higher than the proportion of left-wing students. So in effect, they're saying, if you work to disband these students, we will have you fired. That's gone unspoken, but I'm using the Barnard example because it's a good one. The damage that university professors have done in the last 80 years or so is incalculable, because they have produced the high school teachers and the elementary school teachers that teach crap to kids. I don't know if you saw this. The New York Times had a piece on all the views that these demonstrators have, and it's all about intersectionality and colonization and imperialism and racism against blacks in America. They have been so poisoned. Some commenter, this will really get you, Julie. I love reading comments. There was a comment.
You do.
There was a comment. Yes. There was a comment on an X or a tweet that showed overwhelmingly it was women, aside from Muslim and Arab students, it was women at least one of these college demonstrations, and, you know, screaming and yelling and cursing. And somebody wrote that it reminded them of Charlie Manson's Women. And I got to tell you, I reacted as you are. I got the chills when I read that.
Well, on these campuses, moral confusion has been allowed to spread in a variety of categories. And this is what you were saying about how when you ask these protesters what it is they want or what it is they believe, you get these imperialism, colonialism, intersectionality answers. And it's because in nearly every single category, their brains have been turned into jello. I think you said this, and it's such a good point. If someone says that men give birth, you know their positions on basically everything else. Wasn't it you that
yes, made that I did. Point? I wrote a column on that, including Gaza.
Well, exactly. And so for so long, and I don't mean to say this to give myself credit, but I feel like I saw this when I was at Harvard, and I was calling this out for a long time, and people thought that I was exaggerating or people thought that I was being dramatic. But when moral confusion is inculcated in one category, it spreads to another category. And students on these campuses have been taught that gender is a construct, that race is a construct, that America is a systemically racist colonial imperialist state, that men should be allowed to compete in women's sports, that there was a course at Princeton that free speech is weaponized by the right in America to bring hate speech. That just in so many categories, these individuals have become very confused. And so no wonder it has metastasized into this now, because how could they be clear-headed on the Israel-Gaza issue when on every other issue they've been taught to be confused and radical? So there needs to be a
And
major.
vice versa. It goes
Right,
in both
exactly.
directions, right.
There needs to be a complete blank slate. But I mean, again, the good news is I know people, I have friends who want to go to business school or law school. And many of them are saying that they've taken Columbia, even Harvard, off of their list because they want to go to school. They want to actually have an experience where people are not screaming at
That's
them as
very
they walk into
heartening.
class.
It's hard for me to know how widespread that is, because applications to most Ivy League colleges are either up or the same. Harvard went down a drop, but big deal. So
I think Harvard went down a significant amount, actually. I could be wrong about this, but I do remember reading that their early applications went down by 30% this past year. That's a lot.
No, that's a lot. But that is early. It's interesting that it would affect the early applications. I don't know what parents
Well,
think. Do parents think my kid won't be poisoned? I mean, I've asked this all of my broadcast career of 40 years. You know my line, if you send your kid to college, you're playing Russian roulette with their values. I've been saying that for 40 years. I believe that I had an impact on 14 people in all 40 years, to be honest. I think I've had impact in other areas, but not that one. You can't compete against the belief that my kid will be much more successful going to an Ivy League college. So I'll risk my kid coming out a vile human being, which is what they produce often at these colleges. I'll risk it because it's more important to me that they make more money at a better law firm or a better, what do you have there in New York? What are they known for? Investment group or whatever. Banking,
That's the most Dennis line. What do they have there in New York? Banking money thing.
It is a Dennis line. It shows
Hilarious.
how removed I
That is
am from
so funny.
you're very perceptive.
That's not perceptive. That was the most hilarious not finding the right term I've ever seen. Anyway, go on.
I rather drive a school bus. Than do that work, than be in New
Oh, we're
York.
the same.
And I know we are the same. It's a claim I've made often with regard to you.
But especially with that, I have no interest in that ever. Ugh, can you imagine?
But it's so sad. I mean, parents, why do you think your kid won't come out in America hating? Judeo-Christian religion-hating fool. Why do you think your kid will not be affected? Will not think that if a girl says she's a boy, you should take her breasts off? I mean, do parents live in this make-believe world? Do you have an answer to that?
I do actually. And it's Something that I've been thinking about, especially with my travels, and by the way, I would love to hear you talk about South Africa and your experience there. I was worried about you going there because of the
Well,
anti-Semitism.
it's fun. I'll talk about it. I had some worry too, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing about that, but I have been thinking about this college question, especially as I've been traveling around. And over the past few months, I've gone to Germany, England, Spain, and Italy. And like you, whenever I go to any other place, I try to figure out, okay, what is the human condition look like in another context? Like, how do people do things differently from Americans? And one of the things that I've really appreciated about America, having gone to Europe a bit, is that they still have, in many ways, an aristocratic, class-based culture in a way that we do not have as much. But, and by the way, I'm sorry for the siren, but you're
Well, you're
getting the
in
really
Manhattan.
shrill
That's
in Manhattan.
it's 24/7. Go ahead.
And by the way, we actually should talk about my time on the subway because,
Yeah.
holy moly. So you're really getting the experience here at the siren going by. But in Europe, they have a much more, they still have the remnants of a very aristocratic culture in a way that we don't have here in the United States. However, I think a substitute for that aristocratic culture is this whole college admissions palooza. People here in the United States worship name schools. And I know this better than anyone. And even when I was interviewing that Columbia student on your show, I asked her, "Do you regret going to Columbia?" And she gave a fascinating answer. She said that she was very grateful for many parts of her experience, but she said, "I was really concerned with the name of the school that I was going to." And she said, "I wish I hadn't gotten so caught up in the name, and I wish that I had really been more careful to choose a school where I could actually have a robust intellectual life and debate with people." And she said, "During my entire time at Columbia, I never had one really good or even something even close to good of a debate with somebody." And so I think what you're saying here is really important about the parents. They know how bad a lot of these schools are, but yet just our cultural diet that we consume tells us that our status, our success in life is contingent upon going to these brand name schools. And a lot of parents too, Dennis, sorry to be this blunt and perhaps harsh, but they're more concerned with bringing accolades upon themselves. They want to be able to brag that their kids go to XYZ school. And that's more important to them than if their kid gets brainwashed when at that school.
I'm smiling slash laughing because I have talked about this since my own kids were born. I don't know if I ever told you the story. I mentioned to a friend, someone you know, though you haven't met often, but is someone you know. And I said to him, while I was raising my kids, I said, I just want you to know, I have told my boys that I don't give a damn what college they go to, or even if they go to college, I only care about their character. And he looked at me, and he adores me, and he's known me for many, many years, and I had a deep impact on his life. And nevertheless, he said to me, "It's hard for me to believe you." It struck him
It
as.
is hard to believe.
Yeah, right. That
I've
because
ne I've
he
never heard
said,
a parent say that.
"Well,
Go
that's
on, sorry, I
that.
don't mean
No,
to
no.
interrupt.
You not. Don't be sorry. You made me think. I can't tell you how sad that is. You never heard a parent say that. And I think you're right. I mean, well, look, if a pretty close friend of mine found it unbelievable that I would say that, then your response seems to be valid. You know, I tell this joke that with Jews, fellow Jews, often if you just say, how are you, they tell you what college their kid goes to. That's the answer to the question, how are you? Oh, I have cancer, but my kid's at Dartmouth. Huh?
I said that's not just confined to Jews. I know a
well,
lot of
non-Jews. Well,
no,
that's
that
right.
Too.
That's correct. You're right. It is not just, I have learned that. The man on one of my listener cruises, a very successful businessman who was also pastor of a church, so he made money not as a pastor. A wonderful man who's on the cruise. Generally, wonderful people come on my cruises. And he told me, I don't know if I ever told you this, we were talking, I always ask people about their children. And he said he had three sons. They all had PhDs, and they were from Princeton, Berkeley, and Stanford. And he said, and they're all leftists. He said ruefully. Basically, what he was saying is, BFD. So they got PhDs from prestigious colleges, but they turn out to be, and I'll see if Sean beeps me. Is that allowed, Sean?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. So it'll be beeped. Fine. People will know what I meant. Can you imagine that? I mean, a parent has a kid with PhDs from three of the most prestigious colleges in the country and rues the day they went to those colleges. It's got to be pretty common.
Perhaps. I mean, I do always say, though, I met wonderful people at Harvard.
Oh, no, of course. I'm talking about the ones who turned out lefties. Look.
Yes. No, it's true.
Yeah. So, look, you know, my theory on wonderful kids who went to college, especially prestigious colleges because they're the worst, is A, I am not at all tongue-in-cheek. This is meant seriously. My explanations are, one possibility is they went in so strong in their convictions that no leftism at Harvard or anywhere else could affect them. Or B, mm-hmm. B, they were impervious, not impervious. That was really A. But B, they didn't pay attention. Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? Well, I chose PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. The program is science-based. The PhD program starts with nutrition, but it's much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reasons you gained this weight in the first place. There are no shortcuts, no pills, no injections, just solid science-based nutrition and behavior change. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900, 864-644-1900 to get started, or go online at myphdweightloss.com. Just make the appointment for your one-on-one consultation, no obligation. Call today, 864-644-1900. You know, put their head in their physics book and you know, slept walk through their 4 years. Or C, they were inebriated for 4 years. That's the part where people think I'm being tongue-in-cheek. But I'm not really. I mean, I'm not thrilled. I'm very unhappy if your kid is an alcoholic. I had that, and he's wonderful now, but it's a painful thing. But if your kid, if you, you're better off if your kid drank, did not become an alcoholic, and that somehow guarded them against taking what teacher said seriously. It's that bad. So I want to tell you an interesting thing about my South Africa experience, which is germane. So I was invited to be the guest speaker at a Passover retreat for Jews celebrating Passover. There were retreats all over the world. Last year, I was the guest speaker at a retreat in Cancun, Mexico. This year, in Durban, South Africa. I bring my family, and it's a wonderful thing for the family. And it's, all I have to do is give a few talks, and I get my whole family brought to wherever this is. It was a blessing. So, I didn't say this to you. You'll find this very interesting. So who brought me? There were two groups of Jews there. There were 300 people altogether, I'd say. And they were South African Jews and Australian Jews. I am loved among Australian Jews and South African Jews, and among Latin American Jews, and among British Jews. I am loathed among many American Jews. Isn't that interesting that I sort of had to go to Africa for Jews who want to hear me speak?
So why do you think that is? And I don't disagree with you.
I see that you asked the 64,000 shekel question. And you know what? I don't have an answer. Why has American Jewry produced the most foolish, destructive Jews in modern history? I don't have an answer. You have no idea how it bothers me because I hate not understanding something. Why is the American Jewish community the worst Jewish community of all the Jewish communities? And of course, I love many of them. I founded a synagogue with wonderful people. I know there are exceptions, but as a community, there are more foolish, destructive, Jew percentage, higher percentage of American Jews than of any of. Israeli Jews don't agree with American Jews. Australian Jews don't. South African Jews don't. Argentinian Jews don't. Anywhere you go. So I don't have an answer. It's a phenomenon. It is a phenomenon.
I don't have an answer either. I don't know world Jewry enough to
No,
be
but
able to
you're right,
figure
but
out the differences, but
you know to a certain extent you know American Jews, but of course the American Jews you know are terrific. I mean, you're surrounded by really exceptionally
I know some non-terrific American
oh
Jews,
yeah,
as I
well, you
know
went
some
to Harvard.
non-terrific. Just I know some non-terrific American everybodies. But no, I know a lot of American Jews who don't like you. A lot.
I don't live in a make-believe world. I mean, I'm loathed by many American Jews, which is amazing. I've written the co-authored, to be technical, the most widely used introduction to Judaism in the English language. I've written one of the most widely read Torah commentaries. I brought more Jews back to Judaism than any living Jew. I'm one of the most prominent defenders of Israel among American Jews. You would think that would have been pretty positive, but I'm anti-left, and that makes me an effectively anti-left. That makes me really awful. Sean had a theory, which is not it is not a foolish theory. Which is a compliment to Sean, and difficult as it is,
Knew
I offer it as
you were going to
such.
say
You did?
Yes, of course.
Of course, right.
And my mom is going to think you really don't like him now.
I have to meet with your mom. So his theory is, are the other Jewish groups South African, Australian, Latin American, Israeli, are they as secular as American Jews are?
That's a great question.
It is a great question. And my sense is no. That they're much, the American Jewry is the most assimilated of all the groups I mentioned. Or they are the least Jewish Jews. Jewish either in a national sense or in a religious sense, let alone both. So I think there's something to be said, Sean, about that. I'm gonna work on that and bounce this off people. I may speak about it in my synagogue.
To corroborate your point, you know, here, as I've been in New York, I've been seeing a lot of people from, you know, people my age from high school, college, and the diaspora, as I say, of their friends, their work friends. And I was speaking with one secular liberal Jew, and we were having a great conversation, and she was talking about how crazy the Palestine protests are. But it was so interesting. She said to me, she goes, you know, Julie, I feel like you would have a really good answer to this. So she's asking me, the Gentile, this question. And she goes, there were people at work who were asking me, you know, well, why do the Jews need a state? And she says to me, she goes, honestly, I couldn't come up with a good answer.
Well, how
what would you answer to that question? And I paused and I went, if I, as the Gentile, right, have to like explain, but it shows you, she's Jewish, but she's incredibly, incredibly secular.
Well,
and many secular Jews, all right,
here's, I had an immediate response and I'll give it, but I just want to note,
sure,
this you probably don't know, and very few people know, including Jews. Israel was founded by secular Jews. It was not found by religious Jews.
Socialists.
And often socialists. That's correct. Yes. They were wonderful people, and they all grew up in religious homes. They just rejected the religion, but they kept the Jewish identity. But my immediate answer to your friend would be, why do the French need a state? Why do the Burmese need a state? Would you ask that question? I would ask this girl. I'd say, I'm curious, would you ask that question of any other nation on earth? Why does Botswana need a state? It's the oldest ongoing national identity on earth, Jewish national identity. If anybody would answer the question immediately, hello, we had a state twice before we were destroyed. We want to have it again. But it's so interesting. She has imbibed the anti-Zionist line. The only group that would she ask this of any other group? No. What are there, 40 European countries? Do they all need a country? They're all Europeans, after all. Why do they? Mm-hmm. You know, in Belgium, they speak Flemish, and in the Netherlands, they speak Flemish, basically. Dutch and Flemish are identical, essentially. Why do they need two states?
Well, you know, when I just use that term secular, yes, it is true that this individual is a secular Jew, but I sort of meant it, I hope this makes sense, but not just like she's secular religiously, but she's secular in the sense that she does not appear to have been taught about her Jewishness, irrespective,
correct,
of the religion.
Yes, American Jewry is based, thanks to Sean's question, and it hurts me, but thanks to Sean's question, I think I know. Look, I taught Jewish history at, ironically, the City College of New York, City University of New York, and This is the least Jewish Jews of any community of Jews in the world, is American Jews.
Yeah.
Mm. It's as if many came to America to not be Jewish.
You know, I'll give you another great example that doesn't have to do with Jews, but has to do with this phenomenon more generally. So again, one of the things that I've observed through my travels over the past few months is that generally a lot more Europeans, and again, it's very easy to romanticize Europe or a country that is not your own. I'm not saying that they do everything perfectly or everything is fantastic or every person there is the antidote to the crazies here. I want to temper my commentary, but I noticed that a lot of Europeans, like they know more about their country's history.
That's right.
And about Europe's history than yes. we Americans know about our own history. So it's not just with regard to American Jews
That's
and their Jewishness.
Right. That's right.
It's much generally, and it's so interesting. Like even the most well-educated people, in you know quotation marks, like the ones here in the United States who have had the fanciest or most prestigious educations, they really don't know very much about American history, whereas the average Italian definitely knows about Italian history.
That's right. That's entirely accurate. And therefore there are traditions, whereas here there are no more traditions. They have traditions. They have a traditional way, and I'm not talking about traditional clothing. But weren't you commenting to me about how was it Italian women or French women were dressed compared to American women?
Yes, so beautifully.
Yes, because Italian, yeah. A French woman is a woman. I mean, and she embraces. There's no trans ideology in France. Because there's an ideology of there's something beautiful about being a woman. I revel in being a woman, in being feminine.
Well, you know, another thing, maybe on this history point, because I'm always asking, okay, well, why is this? Why is this? Maybe a lot of Americans, part of the reason that they don't know their history is because they haven't had to. Like it's been not always, but overwhelmingly incredibly stable. Whereas even if you look at Italy, for instance, they had their war of unification at the end of the 19th century. And then there was Mussolini came to power and they had, you know, the many decades of turmoil under him. And then World War II, like, in other words, they sort of needed to know more about their history because they have fathers and grandfathers or great-grandfathers who fought during the War of Unification or were, you know, had this certain position or lived this certain way under Mussolini. So these stories are passed on, whereas here we've been very grateful to have overwhelmingly had a very stable past. But perhaps that's why we don't know it, because there aren't as many kind of bookmarks as there are in other countries. I mean, look at Germany. When I was there, I was talking with people who lived in East Berlin, not people who knew it wasn't people who knew others who lived in East Berlin. It was people who lived in East Berlin. We don't have a counterpart to that.
One of the many, many falsehoods spread by the left is that diversity is a country's strength. It can be if they all share basic values, but if they don't, it's a weakness. So remember, Italians are Italian, the French are French, the Swedes are Swedish, but Americans are everything.
Right.
And unless you,
that's another good point,
positively teach what it means to be American, it's lost.
Yes. 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 Absolutely true. So, well, I have two questions for you. Well, I'll start with this one, and then I have one about South Africa. We have so many students now, and not just students, but to your point about the faculty at Barnard, adults who are intensely anti-American and intensely radical. What do we do? I know this is a very strange analogy, or not strange, strange is the wrong word, but perhaps dramatic, an intense analogy to draw. But there was a denazification effort underway in Germany.
Right.
Like, what is the de-wokeification effort that we are going to undertake here in the United States? Because there are swaths and swaths and swaths of these individuals, and they don't appear to be going anywhere.
One of the most fascinating things I've done is getting a brain SPECT scan. I went to best-selling author Dr. Daniel Amen at Amen Clinics. They're known as perhaps the best brain and mental health company in the world. Most psychiatrists try to figure out, they in some ways guess what your problems are. Amen Clinics treats a variety of mental health issues and actually looks at the organ it treats, the brain. You can get 10% off an Amen Clinics evaluation. Go to amenclinics.com/Dennis. Talking to Dr. Amen about my brain health was extremely informative. And thank God, a great report. I see why looking at the brain before treatment is so important to getting the right care and how it supports targeted treatment for conditions like ADD, depression, memory, and more. Visit amenclinics.com. That's AMEN, as in the word amen. Visit amenclinics.com/Dennis to learn more about their brain-based approach to mental health. Or call 844-256-7266, 844-256-7266, and you also get 10% off by using the code DENNIS10. The best I could think of that's feasible is that they lose their jobs because so few kids are sent to college. That's why I want to take kids out of public schools. I want the teachers to lose their jobs in most cases. Not in all, but in most. They're at best useless and at worst destructive forces, most teachers. From elementary school through college. Did you know that? What did I just report today? Oh, yes. There was a drag queen story hour at the Arizona State Capitol, in the Capitol,
Course there
put on
was.
by the Democratic Party. If the feasible solutions, short of war between Americans, are a massive reduction in the size of government, which would result in vast numbers of destructive bureaucrats losing their jobs, and the same with our schools.
Well, that's why we need Donald Trump to win, because if there's one person who is going to do that, it is Donald Trump. I don't see
I
another
know,
politician who would do
right?
that.
I agree with you. I think DeSantis would have too, but it doesn't. That's
Oh, of course.
it's
I mean right
academic.
now, given the choices.
Correct. The polls are showing that his support among women is considerably less than in 2016, and even 2020,
Not
which.
among this woman.
I know. Well, it doesn't speak well for women. I mean,
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
which is another matter. What did you want to ask me about South Africa? You had another
I
question.
wanted to ask, like, given this conversation about people knowing about their history, what is it like there? I understand that there's a very big racial divide. Can you just kind of give us a sense of how people live and the political or demographic differences?
South Africa's run by the Democratic Party on steroids. It's a vile, vile group of human beings, the ANC. Look, it's the only country in the world that took Israel to the international court. That's how much they hate Israel. Because they got billions, probably, or millions from Qatar to do this. I mean, pretty much it's well known. But they're radical. They're truly radical. They're white-hating. They're America-hating. And they're, above all, Israel-hating. But I want to tell you, and I reported this on my show, obviously, the people in Durban, which is the very bottom of South Africa on the Indian Ocean, virtually to a person, were among the sweetest human beings I have met in 130 countries. You have no idea how difficult it was for me to abstain from saying, did you vote for the ANC? African National Congress.
Oh, that would have been very, very interesting to know.
Oh, because beyond interesting. But they were so sweet, I didn't... I didn't want to bring... I mean, if I had more time with any one of them, I'm sure I would have, but...
But if I may cut in, and I don't mean to interrupt you, I saw a tweet that you put out recently, and it was so, so good. You said there's a difference between being nice... Hold on, let me pull this up because we need to read it exactly. But you were essentially saying that nice people can do incredibly destructive things.
Yeah, it's a very
and
big
can vote
theme
for
of mine.
Incredibly. It really is because it has always confused me because I know a lot of people who on a micro level,
right, are wonderful.
I really like
exactly.
But then I go, how could you support the thing that you support? Here, this is it. I love it. I realize nice people can vote viciously because there's no connection between being nice and being wise. You can be not nice and wise, and you can be nice and a fool.
Yeah, somebody put it up. They took it from my show, I think. Where did you see that? Do you have it?
Twitter.
Good. Somebody tweeted something.
You and your social media, don't.
Yes. I'm pathetic in social media. But
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, by the way, I had a line. I liked it so much, I had Sean write it down. Sean, you have the line in front of you about the naive? You'll love this, Julie. Did you hear it?
Oh, I have to tell.
Okay. People become cynical because they started out naive.
Yes.
That was a good Prager insight, if I'm allowed to speak of my own insights. I don't have a cynical bone in my body because I've never been naive about human nature. So I don't get cynical. I'm realistic. Mm-hmm. The human condition stinks. That's not cynical. It's like saying, you know, the weather in London stinks. That's not cynical. It's just a fact.
Yeah, if you believe that people are basically good, you are setting yourself up for a life of massive disappointment.
Right. Personal and global.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you were saying the African ANC is the Democratic Party on steroids, and the people in Durban were very sweet.
There was a gentleness. I'm telling you, it was eerie. And I was waiting to think, well, maybe some of the interaction is because these were people working at the resort that we were staying at for Passover. So they're just nice to clients. But when I would meet people outside of the hotel, it was the same thing. There was a gentleness to their spirit, which was very, very moving. Mm. So I don't know what to say. I did learn thank you in Zulu, however.
That's a good one to have.
I've added it to my thank you collection, which is very large. And I'm telling you, and everybody listening, you want to make an instant friend with someone, learn thank you in their language. just thank you. I know thank you in Amharic, which is the Ethiopian language. There are a lot of Ethiopians in the United States. When I say to an Ethiopian in the United States, Amasaganalo, they can't do enough for me. It's like I could be elected.
That is a good life hack.
Mayor of Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. So anyway, it's Gabunga in Zulu. Isn't that gorgeous? Gabunga.
Yeah, it is. To your point about making friends and to this greater point about people in the United States not knowing their history as compared to other countries, I remember a few years ago, I got into an Uber and I had a Rwandan driver. And I started chatting with him and I said, where are you from? And when did you come to the United States? And he said about 20 years ago. And I said, oh, so you came after the Civil War. I imagine that you fled the Civil War. And I'll never forget, we were at a stoplight and he turned around and he looked at me and he said, no American has ever asked me that question. They have never known about the Hutu and the Tutsis in the 90s. Never. He said, I can't believe it.
By the
and
way,
I thought,
for the
yeah,
no, no, it's painful.
20 years being in the United States and no one asked you that question.
I believe him and it's painful. To go to school is to learn nothing, or just
it's so
just
true,
well,
no, it's
no,
so it, true.
Yes.
I used to think it was bad, but there was some things that you learned. You actually really learned nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
Certainly not about evil. One of my columns in the last year was young people don't learn about evil. They don't know about Auschwitz. They don't know about Gulag. They don't know about Rwanda. Do you know a friend of mine from high school, from college, he made Aliyah. He's an American Jew. He went to live in Israel in his 20s. He got very, very high in the Israeli Foreign Office. In fact, I think for a period he was the Israeli ambassador to the UN. He really went high. And he became he was also the head of the Israel branch of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. He is a real scholar on the Holocaust. And he said to me, said, Dennis, the closest thing to the Holocaust since the Holocaust was what happened in Rwanda. The Hutus murdered, what was the number? Was it 600,000? I don't remember the number. But they did it, this is really frightening, they did it in a very short period of time and without any weapons. In other words, any automatic or even non-automatic, no guns, no gas chambers, just by hacking people to death.
You know, I as you're speaking, and we've talked about this on Dennis and Julie, but now I'm really going to do it, especially because I have a plane ride soon coming back to Los
you'll
Angeles.
Become,
with nothing but
you'll become an expert on Rwanda in the next week.
Oh, no. No, that's not what I was going to say, although I could go down that rabbit hole. Here's what I was going to say. I want to create, and we've discussed this, a list of questions. Maybe it can be a quiz for something else.
Let's do it together.
Do you? Yes. What do you know? I mean,
right.
Even if my child went to college and there was just a course that was called the 20th century in bullet points, and they just went around the world and in every single country went, you know, talked about the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia for one class, and then went over to China and talked about the, you know, 1911 revolution, and then the 1949 civil war, the triumph of the Communist Party, Mao Zedong. And then you went over to Iran and learned about the ousting of Mossadegh in the 1979 revolution and the Shiite fundamentalists.
No, the ousting of the Shah in 79. Mossadegh was in the 50s.
Right. Well, I was saying ousting Mossadegh in the 50s and then revolution in 1979.
Right.
But even if my child, the only thing they could be able to tell me about, like, any of these countries were two bullet points about something that happened, I would be thrilled.
Right.
But most college kids don't even know that.
Well,
they don't know what the Khmer Rouge is.
No, of course not. So evil, which is a very important thing to know about, is unknown. You know the only evils they really know? The only evils they know is American racism and that the founders had slaves. That's the extent of the evils that they know. It's frightening, actually. But it's not only about evil. I don't know. I'm sure I asked you, but maybe I didn't. If I walked around or had somebody walk around Harvard Square and asked 100 students, can you name the four Gospels? Outside of committed Christians, do you think any could? The four Gospels.
I couldn't name the four Gospels. I couldn't name the four Gospels until I was done with college and actually read it on my own. I didn't know what E Pluribus Unum was or meant before I encountered your book when I was a sophomore.
Oh, that's a great one. We got to put in E Pluribus Unum.
I didn't learn about federalism until I was in college.
Right. Well, all right, but you acknowledge that you learned it at college. I don't think most kids at college learn what federalism
means. It took me until I was 21 years old to learn about federalism in the United States.
If it weren't for the Broadway show, they wouldn't know who Hamilton was.
Yeah, that's so true. No, that we'll do. We will do this list. A quiz.
I wonder in your lifetime how many countries you'll end up in, because you know the power of travel. I could tell.
Oh, it's everything. It is absolutely everything. And every single time if you are an American, you feel so lucky to come back home.
Well, I will say this, and it's the most painful thing I could think of saying. All of my life, I felt luckier. Coming home doesn't evoke the same chilled feeling. Welcome to the United States of America at whatever airport I land. All of my life. Do you know, when I came back from the Soviet Union when I was 21 years old and I had just spent a month there, and I remember looking at my passport, they were gray then, now they're blue, and I remember looking at it and thinking, just having this little document means I could leave this hellhole of the Soviet Union and go to the heaven of the United States. Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? Well, I chose PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in Chronic Disease and Sports Nutrition. The program is science-based. The PhD program starts with nutrition, but it's much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reasons you gained this weight in the first place. There are no shortcuts, no pills, no injections, just solid science-based nutrition and behavior change. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900, 864-644-1900 to get started, or go online at myphdweightloss.com. Just make the appointment for your one-on-one consultation. No obligation. Call today, 864-644-1900. Just having this little document means I could leave this hellhole of the Soviet Union and go to the heaven of the United States. It chilled me. I had some tears in my eyes when I left the Soviet Union because of the people I left behind. But I must admit that I worry about this country very, very seriously at this time. But anyway, it's one of the important factors what travel enables you to do. The dramatic thing that people need to realize is it is very beautiful that there are many cultures in the world. It is a beautiful thing. What isn't beautiful is many moralities. Culture is culture.
Well said.
And morality.
Write that one down, Sean. Go on.
It is a beautiful thing that there are many cultures in the world. It is not beautiful if there are many moralities in the world. Culture and morality are not the same thing, obviously. And it is a beautiful thing to see different cultures. I paused for a moment because of some sound effect in the background. Was it coming from you?
Like a helicopter flying by to catch another criminal?
Oh, was that what it was? Yeah, well, it's an action-packed place in New York. So tell us about your subway story.
Oh, yes. Well, no, on this point, I'm sure that most bad actors throughout American history shared this trait, but the thing that truly enrages me about the people that we are seeing now is that they have no bleeping idea how lucky they are to be American. And I posted this thing on my Instagram and people thought that I was kidding and I wasn't. I would pay for their one-way ticket to go to any country of their choice. First class. All expenses paid for.
If they started,
I will pay for you to go.
Oh, if we started a GoFundMe page to have leftists leave the country, we would raise $1 billion.
I'm not kidding. We really should. Any country of your choice, go study abroad in Gaza. Go study abroad in Iran, especially if you're a woman with blue hair and your crop top. I will pay for you to go do that. But yes, I will tell you as we close out the show about my experience on the subway. So funny how Dennis and Julie is comprised of our personal stories that we make macro into greater commentaries on America. But okay, so I know what people are going to think. They're going to think, oh, you know, LA girl gets on the subway and she's so terrified and boo-hoo. You know what? That's exactly right. LA girl gets on the subway and she was terrified. I am not going to back down from this one. I know people are going to give me a hard time, but first of all, and I haven't been on the subway since I was 15 years old when I was in New York, when I was a teenager. So it's been a while. I go down into the subway, and first of all, the physical infrastructure is so decrepit. Again, I know this sounds dramatic and I don't care. It literally looks like a third world country. Now, I was on the subway when we were in London, Dennis. I took the tube, as they call it, every single day to our conference for like 40 minutes. The infrastructure is gorgeous. And you go on the subway, and I was looking around for gang etchings, gang signs. I was looking for gum on the floor. And it was so clean on the tube in London. So I want people to know that, yes, of course, with public transportation, sometimes you're not going to get always the best. But it doesn't have to be this way. In other countries, and I've taken public transportation very recently in other countries, it is not bad. So first of all, the physical infrastructure is horrible. Second, the two times that I was on the subway, both times people got on and started yelling once the doors shut about how they needed money and walked around yelling about begging for money. And at one point, one of the people who came onto the subway had many kids walking around chanting candy, 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 and was handing out candy for people to buy. It was so sad, the level of poverty and homelessness and destitution of so many of the people on the subway. And I wasn't on it for very long. I only went twice, once in the morning and once in the evening. And both times this happened. And then another example I'll give is that I was sitting there and there was on one stop, a really, really strung out guy came on the subway and he looked very menacing and scary. And he walked right up to me and he goes, "You're really pretty. Can I sit next to you?" And I'm thinking, what the heck do I do? It was very scary as a woman, as anybody, but especially as a woman, when some very large, strung out guy does that. He comes and he sits next to me and he continues to talk with me. Or he was like, I want to know your name. I want to know where you're from. Da, 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 da. I get up, I walk to the other side of the subway. He follows me. And I tapped some guy on the shoulder who was listening to, he had AirPods in, and I said, "Can you please help me?" And the guy stepped in and told the other guy to get lost.
He did?
But
That's
it's like,
very nice to
yeah.
hear.
But the point is, Dennis, I was maybe on the subway for 40 minutes of my whole trip. And every single stop, there was a new occurrence, whether it was the begging or the strung out guy coming on. It's really, really bad. It is as bad, probably worse than people make it out to be.
That's right.
And it confirms Rob Henderson's point. You know, he always talks about luxury beliefs. So many in this country who vote Democrat are very wealthy, especially in New York City, and they're taking Ubers and cabs. Most people can't afford to take Ubers and cabs every day and have to deal with that.
That's right.
And it is truly, truly terrifying.
Is there
But if they'd like
any part of you that would like to live
to be a
there?
Democrat, they can do that. There was, it's been very nice to see friends. It's been nice to kind of be in a different city. I will say, if there's anything that would prevent me from going, it's that subway ride. At the risk of sounding dramatic, I felt incredibly, incredibly unsafe. And it's just not tenable to live in a city where you can't take public transportation because you fear that something is going to happen to you. I know where you stand on that.
Well, I don't like New York City. Not out of fear. I just unpleasant. I found it unpleasant when I left in my 20s. It's one of the reasons I left.
Do you think LA is different? And what
Yeah.
is more
Oh.
unpleasant?
When I came to LA, I'll give you one example. It blew my mind, having grown up in New York City. I came here when I was 25, and walking on the street in New York, I never once recall a female human being of any age making eye contact with me, because the females in New York, and we're talking the 1970s, so 50 years ago, the females in New York knew you don't make eye contact with a man. You don't know what will happen. You're inviting him if you do. When I came to LA, women did not have that. I mean, they just looked at you like they would look at anybody, and even on occasion smile. And I thought, I've come to heaven. I've moved to heaven. So if you ask, what was it like in LA compared to New York? That's a perfect example. But you check next.
Yes,
You're in New York now. You check. Well, you can't. You're a woman, so you might be able to make eye contact with another woman. But generally speaking, they walk looking down. By the way, there's another reason you walk looking down in Manhattan, to avoid dog poop. Not just eye
or
contact.
human.
Or human now. Yes, that's the new addition to the joys of New York City.
I mean, my sister, who has to commute into work, she lives in Brooklyn. She has to commute into work every day. She has two pocket knives in her purse
Wow.
and pepper spray, and all of her friends do too. But the problem is, this has become so normal to us you know, that we just kind of take it. That's
Yeah,
not normal.
but that's the party of the defund the police and let's bring in millions more and give them room and board and medical care and education.
Well, if there's one thing from this episode that I hope gives people some semblance of hope, though I understand that you're not as optimistic as I am, Dennis, is that the good news about things getting so bad is that maybe they need to get this bad in order for people to turn it around.
Yeah,
Colleges,
that may be,
subway, all of
maybe we'll find out
it.
in November, won't we?
Oh my gosh, I'm doing everything I can. I'm releasing a video soon. People should check out why I'm voting for Trump. It's called I'm 24 years old. I'm a 24-year-old woman, and here's why I'm voting for Trump.
I can't wait to see it, actually. I mean it. I'm very,
I'm
very
sure people are
interested.
gonna love it. I'm sure there's gonna be all kinds of lovely comments.
Well, this was great catching up with you, as always. And we
I
have
know.
not missed
Well,
a Dennis and Julie since you were a college student.
no, we haven't, and we'll be back in person. But again, it's amazing how that we don't miss, and that we do 98% of them in person, given the travel schedule.
That's right. We're very committed. Oh, so let me end
So
on a very nice note. I told you this
okay.
from South Africa, but a number of people came over, one at least one South African and one Australian, and all they talked to me about was not me and my broadcast that I'm on South African radio, was you,
That's cool.
Dennis and Julie, and Timeless. They just wanted
Wow.
you to know how much they adored you. And I said,
Well, that is so
I
sweet.
think I get it.
Oh, well, that is so kind, and it really means so much to me. Thank you for telling me that, and thank you if those people are listening for that kind
Oh yeah, that's right.
for
They
those
may
kind words.
they probably are listening.
I've got a good one for you. I haven't told you this, and I didn't even tell Sean and Rick this, and Alejo and Tony and Zach, as I've been corresponding with them remotely for the past 2 days. I got recognized in JFK for Dennis and Julie.
I love it. Was
And
it
here's a great
a
thing.
man or
He's
a woman?
Man, and it's super interesting. I know he's listening because he says he listens to every single Dennis and Julie. I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, too late if he does, but he was fully tatted. He had like a full sleeves on
Sleeve,
both sides.
right.
Yeah, and he was 30 years old. And the reason I say that is because people have this idea of conservatives, that you know they're like, I don't know. They look a certain
Many
way,
years
right?
ago, you could make assumptions about tattooed people, but now, I mean, if it's
You
up the
can't at
neck and the
all.
face and the head, it's generally different. But
Right. But
there, it
he was
does.
so great. He says he
I know nothing about a person if I know they're tattooed.
Yeah. So that's a good part. May have almost died on the subway, but at least I got recognized in JFK
I'm so happy that
for Dennis
happened.
and Julie.
That's really nice. All right, tell
Well,
everybody how to contact us.
I was going to say, given that you didn't know that tweet was on your Twitter page, I will tell people your social media. It's at the Dennis Prager on Instagram and at Dennis Prager on Twitter. And you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Julie R. Hartman. And as always, you can email me at julie@julie-hartman.com. And I'm so excited to be back in LA, back in person for not only Timeless, but Dennis and Julie. So thanks for tuning in to this remote episode.
Thanks, everybody.
Shalom.